Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to this week's installment of the Yukon Pod. We've crossed into November on our calendars and still going with the weekly podcast after all these weeks, which is nice to see. This is Aman Kidwai, manager of the Yukon blog. I'm joined by Brenner Pizak and Tim Fontenot. What's
Hi
up,
guys.
guys?
Hey everybody.
How are you guys?
Doing well, doing well. Someone who's doing particularly well, it must be Bob Diaco. He got to wear a fresh red sweater on Friday night,
Oof,
and
fantastic.
also watched his UConn Huskies win 31-13 over East Carolina. Really, really big win for very many, many reasons. First of all, just good to see UConn beat a good team. Amazing to see bowl game hopes revived. Brenner, what were some of your takeaways from watching the game Friday night?
Okay, first thing, a little bit superficial, but I actually thought the uniforms were sweet. I thought the alternates looked pretty awesome. I did not have high hopes for these coming in, but I thought they looked pretty classy on the field. I thought they looked nice, and I was very, very impressed and excited with the outcome of the game, obviously. The defense, UConn defense, that was the number one thing for me. It's just the takeaways. When you get four picks, it's almost hard to lose when you're plus three on a turnover margin. When you're plus three, it just puts the game in a different category for you. It did not start off well, obviously, with Sheriff throwing that pick six. I'm sitting there saying to myself, we've seen this episode before. Another just horrible throw. And he still finished 12 of 21, 184 yards, one pick, one touchdown. Not horrible. Certainly nothing to write home about, a 47.8 QBR. But really, the star of the show, I think, as we talked last week, guys, was Arkell Newsom. We just said that he would be fed the rock, and boy, 25 carries for 179 yards. He added a 41-yard reception. He had a 90-yard touchdown run, longest of the season of his career. I thought Arkell Newsom was explosive. He was our playmaker. He was the guy we were able to lean on, and I liked that in a game where we talked last week, UConn was just gonna. It seemed like a game UConn really had to win if they wanted to have positive feelings about this season, and they really rode their horse Newsom all the way in this game. And I think we saw signs of the offense involving the tight ends the way we've been complaining and kind of just clamoring for. But still only four catches between the two of them. They did have a touchdown called back on the penalty, but I did like how they were being at least involved in the offense. I mean, it felt like we went a month where they were literally not even looked at on offense. I thought that as far as the defensive line went, we got a lot more pressure than we had in the previous weeks. I was excited to see that. I was excited to see pressure up the middle. And basically, the whole game came down to making plays on the ball with bad quarterback throws. And we spoke last week that UConn secondary had multiple chances in the previous three games to turn around and make a play on the football because we were giving up completions that weren't perfect throws, perfect routes. They were plays that our guys should have been able to break up or make a pick on, but we never got our head turned around. And today, last game, when we were able to turn our heads around, plays were being made on the ball. And when you have four picks, yeah, a couple of them were absolutely just miserable throws, but we were giving up completions on miserable throws prior to this. So I thought it was a huge step in the right direction to be able to get those defenders turned around and actually playing the football because they've been in pretty decent position all year, and now they were able to actually make the plays to seal it up. So that was my big takeaway. Arkell Newsom is an absolute stud, and Brian Sheriff's played poorly again, in my estimation, but it kind of got masked when you have four picks and you have almost 200 yards and you have over 200 yards of total offense for your running back. It kind of hides what the quarterback's doing.
Yeah, I mean there are some of these. He had 12 completions, but he probably shouldn't have even had that. He's just very fortunate that he's got guys like Noel Thomas Tyreek Beal, Hargy Mayala, who can make these plays. Alec Bloom, who can go up and get the pass. He's overthrowing or underthrowing pretty much everything. He's putting the ball out of bounds. And, I mean, that pick six, that was package. Or, like, you saw that almost from the time the ball was snapped. You saw East Carolina sniffing that out, and there was no chance it wasn't going the other way. But I think he started off very shaky. Defense was kind of shaky to start out. And, you know, between that pick six and Nick Vitale, whatever the hell that was on the punt return that ended up going 15 yards back and he had to fall on it, this was disaster waiting to happen for the Huskies. And I think they started to settle in. You know, Sheriff's held his own. His receivers made plays for him. Like Brenner said, tight ends have to get involved. And there they are with that touchdown that gets called back on what is really a stupid penalty. Ineligible receiver downfield when Vetri's like 3-4 yards back or 4 yards upfield. I mean, that just doesn't make any sense to me. Overall, Newsom, unbelievable. Again, the 179 yards, that 90-yard scamper, that was something we haven't seen in a long time from the Huskies, and it was good to see because now here they are with 4 wins. They got 3 games left. There's a possibility of a bowl game, and obviously it's going to require beating one of Houston or Temple, two of the 3 best teams in the conference, and winning on the road at Tulane, which is going to be an interesting game on Saturday, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, that, you know, the thing about that Newsom touchdown, as Bob Diaco said in his press conference on Tuesday, that was more than just a touchdown. You know, that was a big game changer for UConn, especially with how bad their field position was in that game. You know, not just on that drive after the Vitale double muff, or whatever you want to call it. Some of the UConn coaches were saying that he fumbled 3 times on that play.
Which is why no UConn player should ever be able to return a punt.
Yeah, maybe. Wow. But, you know, the other thing was that UConn had terrible, terrible field position. And Newsom's TD, in addition to scoring 6 points, being an awesome play, you know, and all of that, really helped reset that battle for field position, which, when UConn's defense was playing as well as it had been, was a really, really big thing. So, you know, it's great to see Newsom being able to have that kind of impact, and for it to happen without UConn doing anything crazy, no flea flicker, no play action, 5-step, 7-step drop, you know, crazy route combinations. It was just an off-tackle run, executed well, and it got 90 yards and a touchdown. Which I think is great. Brenner, I agree with you. I think that the big thing for the defense was that pressure coming from the defensive line and up the middle. And I think that definitely helped make some of those throws, which were intercepted, so awful to begin with. So a situation where, you know, we weren't really seeing a lot of defensive pressure past couple of games, really, really stepped that up this week. And with the season going the way that it had, you know, we were talking about, you know, what kind of downward spiral this might be the beginning of, with the USF loss going the way that it had, and then being kind of demoralized against Cincinnati, beating ECU like this by so many points, getting us our 5th win. I mean, at least there's some excitement now. There's a possibility that you come and you beat Tulane, which definitely do not want to look past them, but you can beat Tulane. You've got 2 chances, albeit against ranked opponents. You've got 2 chances, including 1 at home after a bye week, against a Southern team in November in New England, to win a game. So at the very least, something is on the line, and we haven't really had that for a couple of years with UConn football. So awesome.
I was going to say, I think the last time we had a meaningful game this late in the season at home would be probably Cincinnati in 2010, which was, I think, the game where everyone started to realize that the BCS was a reality. And I think we're going to see UConn come out and give that fight. I think they'll beat Tulane. They'll give that fight against Houston. And then even if they don't, you go to Temple, which, you know, it's not going to be a long drive. I already know a lot of people who are making the Temple trip. And, you know, if UConn country starts to get behind this team again, you'd go down to Temple with a lot of support behind you that late in the season. And if Temple's out of the American Championship. Well, they'll be going to the American Championship no matter what, out of the East Division probably. I just think that that's another game where they're going to have a fighting chance.
Yeah, I think for me, if as a fan slash writer, whatever. If we beat Tulane, then I'm going to Temple. You know.
Yeah, I'll see you there.
No matter what, you know, that's going to happen. So, great win for UConn. Only semi disappointing part, you know, and I touched on it in the four takeaways piece. I am almost never one to begrudge the fan base for their participation and involvement in games. I think, like I said, you know, if fans don't want to go, that's on you for not putting on a good enough show, you know, or giving them enough reasons to. But I was really, really disappointed to see, as UConn was going up big, as the Huskies were, you know, getting a really big win for this season, a really meaningful one, the most important of Bob Diaco's tenure, you would have to imagine, for the fans to be heading to the exits, particularly, you know, at the end of the game. UConn is putting the game away, and you don't want to stick around to applaud that team until the end of the game. You know, we talked about the team giving us a full 60 minutes, and sometimes you wish at least the fans could do that in a situation where it's positive. If UConn's being blown out, if it's the other way around, I say, by all means, head to the exits, go salvage your Friday night. But UConn's winning big, that's cause for celebration. There should be people staying in the tailgates afterwards, continuing to drink and grill. I was kind of disappointed by that.
Yeah, me too. I mean, obviously I may have a little bit of a different take on it than a lot of people. A lot of people know I was always front row in the student section, always out there hours before a game, and I always stay to the end. I don't believe in leaving a game early, no matter what. But it's kind of a slap in the face to the players when they're trying so hard to fill that stadium again, to get this program back to where it was a few years ago, where we were getting 35,000 to 40,000 fans in that stadium every Saturday or Friday night. I mean, here they are playing their best game of the season, arguably, the way they just absolutely handled East Carolina, which I admittedly was wrong earlier last week when I said I didn't think UConn was going to be able to win that game. They go out there and put on this show, and you reward them by leaving with 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter. There was almost no one there when the game ended. And I'm just thinking to myself, how can you possibly do this to that team? What, like, the student section was almost gone, which is expected at halftime of a game that they're already down by 20 in. But, yes, it's a Friday night. But you're telling me that you have to get back to UConn by 11? Because if you get back at 11:30, there's not going to be a party going on? That's just not true at all. That's stupid of me. Just stay to the end. Show your support for the team. They've been trying so hard to get back to that level. And here they are showing that this season's not lost yet, that there's still something to play for. You're just going to abandon them like that? That doesn't make sense to me.
I see your point, guys, but I actually have to, I think, disagree a little bit. I understand that you want to see, you know, the fans holding it out till the end all the way through, but I understand when you say, well, the UConn team, they're trying so hard to give a good product or whatnot. I mean, this is a team that has been absolutely abominable for 3 years. But how are fans supposed to know that that's going to be the case? I mean, when they're going there, it's the type of fan that's going there. It's a casual, oh, you know, I might as well go check a UConn game out. You know, I'm an older person just driving up to Hartford. There's no buzz because there's no buzz around the team. So you're not getting everybody, like, excited to go to the game. It's just kind of, I mean, in my opinion, UConn was lucky to have that game with so many fans to start with what they've shown. We're coming off a game where the other team is running at will against you in the second half, making you look like a peewee football team. And another lost season. Everyone is assuming that this season is now lost. We are not going to go to another bowl game. I find it hard to drive up the excitement for that type of game. And I was actually pleased with the amount of people that were there at the start. It became a blowout. I think that I don't think that UConn has any place to criticize the fans after the product that they've been putting on the field. The product has been absolutely pathetic. And for the first game that you're going to have that is exciting to watch at home for UConn in literally years, we're going to complain that people wanted to leave when it was a 20-point game with 8 minutes left. I can't get behind that. I think that we were lucky as UConn fans that we still have a fan base that wants to come out to these games. We got to remember where these games are in the middle of East Hartford. We got to remember what it takes to get to these games, not only for the students. It's not like they're just walking off the stadium grounds to their dorms. They got to take a 35-minute bus ride. It's not as simple, in my opinion, as we're making it look to be here. I think that UConn fans, they've been through just an absolute drought with UConn football. I think that we should be looking at the positivity that there still are those fans around, and it's going to take consistent, decent efforts to keep these team the fans in the seats and to keep this team relevant. Because
but we're kind of talking about two different things, though. One is getting fans there in the first place, which I'm saying, which is all of the points that you're saying, which I agree with. Of course, if you didn't want to go to the East Carolina game, that's fine by me. You just saw them. You've been watching. You saw them get crushed.
Yeah, but they're not going. My point is they're going just to see an event. What are we going to go? Let's go to a movie tonight. It's not like they're saying to themselves, we're going to go watch UConn football tonight. We're diehard no matter who they're playing, when the game is, what the situation is, because
no,
we love UConn football.
No, that's exactly
me. There
were tons
the people who are there now because of the way the season's been are the people who are there because they love UConn.
That's a minority, guys. That's not just like the average fan in Connecticut is not going to just be like, wow, I love UConn football so much. I got to go there for all the games. The
Which is why there's only 15,000 people in the stadium.
UConn football is not some spectacle, though, where a casual football fan goes. If you, just like you said, it takes a lot of effort to get there. So if you get there...
But that's just something they're doing on a Friday night, dude. What else is there to do in Hartford, East Hartford, Connecticut?
Okay, exactly. Then why are people leaving early?
Yeah. Because they're just there casually. They're not saying, I got to get there for the start and literally see until the end of the game. They're just like, something for me to do tonight is head over to the UConn game. That's just something I could do.
But what's the point of leaving early in that situation? Like you said, another option is go to the movies on a Friday night. You're not going to walk out of a movie right before the final scene.
But you would if you knew that what the final scene was going to be 30 minutes before. If they told you the final scene is going to be this in 30 minutes from now, you'd be like, okay, well, I've already seen that, so I'm going to head out.
Yeah, but UConn was also, you know, a couple of those turnovers were late in the game when ECU actually had a chance to get back in this game in the fourth quarter. And, you know, they turned the ball over late. They weren't able to get back in it. But there was a realistic possibility that East Carolina could have made this a game.
But we're not even talking about a game that's like 45-3. It was 24-13, you know? And we're talking about people leaving the game.
Yeah.
It's an 11-point game, and there's 10 minutes left. And UConn is winning, and you're leaving.
I feel like everybody was leaving until it was a little bit more than that.
I don't know. I feel like with UConn fans in general, I go back to Gino Auriemma a couple weeks ago saying this thing about how goddamn stupid some of our fans are. It's not just a football thing, and it's not just a losing team sort of thing. People don't go to watch a women's basketball team anymore because they win all the time. It's a good show that they're putting on, but because they're winning, people aren't showing up. And
I don't know if it's because they're winning. I think it's because it's women's basketball. Like
no, but then no even
women's
men's basketball
programs
too.
that have like outstanding attendance because it's not an exciting product. That's why it
right.
doesn't make
but you look
money
at men's
on
basketball
the
too,
professional
and
level.
They're leaving the games early. I mean, the men's basketball team, it could be a 10-point game with 5 minutes left, and people are making their way to the doors. Like, it just doesn't make any sense to me.
It's always been that way for UConn fans because we have a large old person fan base. Like, there's a lot of old people.
But it's not just old people that are doing that. That's the thing.
Certainly not just old people, but I think that has to be what you look at. Like, it's always been the case at the XL Center games. You'd be saying to yourself, wow, UConn's, like, killing. Why are people leaving the games? Because they're old people. They're not, like, diehard sports fans like us and, like, the latest generation of UConn fans has seen.
But
they're old people.
Brenner, I think these segments that you're describing, though, the old people and the casual fans at a football game, are not, you know, are not in that group where, are not as many as the other groups that we're talking about, which are like people who care about UConn sports,
yeah,
people who are there to watch the game, people who have had season tickets for years, the season ticket holders, I'm saying season ticket holders, people who like to go to UConn games, people who care fervently about UConn sports, are going to this game more so than the let me casually catch a sporting event crowd. That's all. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
And I mean, in among that crowd, my thing would be, you know, you're paying all this money for a ticket. You're paying all this money to park for food, beer. What's the point of that if you're just going to leave early? Just watch the game on TV, grab a six pack, you know, make a couple hot dogs. I don't know.
If you're going to, like, wonder what the point of people leaving early of any sporting event is, I mean, we could sit there and debate that forever, but it happens all the time, all around the entire country.
Yeah. Oh, but
if it's a blowout, look for the seats to be emptying. I mean, I don't know.
What we're saying is this is not a, like, massive blowout. And yeah. And this
was,
is not.
Well, it's pretty close to a blowout, guys. This, like, there was a long, very big stretch for them to get back in the game.
But it wasn't. It wasn't a blowout. And
it
this
was
is
a
not,
two-score game in the fourth quarter.
And this is not a regular occurrence either. This is not like, oh, UConn football beating up on someone by 40 again, as we're used to always. That so nobody wants to watch. Or the reverse, which has been, oh, UConn football getting crushed. I do not want to watch that. I do not feel like sticking around for the end. That is fine. But if we're talking about UConn winning this game, it's not some crazy blowout. Then why wouldn't you stay till the end, applaud the team, applaud the team's effort, see what happens when the team celebrates a really, really big win for the program?
It's another 15 minutes. What's going to change in your life if you don't leave those 15 minutes early?
If you've already made all that investment and gotten out to the middle of East Hartford and you drove out there.
Yeah.
I can't agree. Every single team in the country has people leaving, whether they're winning or losing, if it's a couple scores. There's literally games where it's a tight game and right at the end of the fourth quarter, 20% of the people leave because they budgeted a certain amount of time that they're going to go to this game. And they don't care that much about it. They went to the game, so now they're going to go home, and that's it. And that happens literally all over the country. You see it in every stadium.
The complaint is we're not going to show up if they're not winning. But then when they're winning, you decide to skip out. You can't have it both ways.
I don't think you could say winning just because they won one game. It's not like the people were going to the game assuming that it was going to be a good time and they were going to win and that's why we had blah, blah, blah. It was assuming it was going to be a bad game. Then out of the blue, a good game happens.
But if you're assuming it's a bad game, why are you going to spend the money on tickets? Why are you going to spend the money on parking, on concessions?
Just to go do something because it's Connecticut and there's not much to do.
You can go to the bar to watch the game at that point. It's something to do, and you're interacting with people still.
I don't think
people
are
talking
buying
about just students. We're talking about, like, a couple. They're not going to just go to the bar. Maybe they're going to go watch the game.
And stay the whole time.
I don't think so, dude. I mean, like, I'm just saying that every team has people that are going to leave at the end, even if they're, like, a great team. Just because people in America don't stay to the very end of sporting events, a lot of times because literally at a Yankee game, they'll be winning, and people will be leaving in the eighth or ninth to avoid traffic, even though they go to every single game. So
Yankee fans are the worst thing in existence anyway, so that's just a different topic.
Same thing happens in Boston, dude.
Yeah, but Boston fans are better than New York fans.
Or at Patriots games. We're not going to go there. We're not going to go there, but obviously we'll agree to disagree.
This was fun. We haven't had something like this before.
I know. We need to disagree.
Can we do this more? I like arguing.
Yeah. No, that's – and you know what else? You know who else likes arguing is the people. The people love arguing. Oh, so we'll try and find some more things that we disagree about going forward.
I might go check the Boneyard later to see if this becomes a thread, because I'd be really interested. Not only just to hear what their thoughts are on this, but what their thoughts are on us as people. I want to know that.
They hate us. They hate us, and we're not fans of the team, actually. That's the general consensus.
Yeah.
So we're not going to agree on the fan situation, but suffice it to say, there's reason to be disappointed. There are some reasons that you can excuse that behavior, certainly, but at least there was a win. You know, at least we beat East Carolina. At least we're at 4 wins on the season, so good stuff there. In less positive news, the men's hockey team had a 2-game series with Notre Dame. Unfortunately, the Ice Bus was swept by the Golden Domers, a team that has seemed to give UConn trouble. I believe the Huskies are 0-3-1 against Notre Dame in the illustrious history of this series. At least UConn football is undefeated against Notre Dame. But
damn right.
Tim, you were at both games.
Mm.
So why don't you hit us with some takeaways, what went wrong, and how we're feeling about the status and health of the Ice Bus.
Oh, I mean, that's all I can think of for that. I mean, that game on Sunday, you just have to throw it out. You have to forget it ever happened. But they played well Saturday. It was a 2-1 game on Saturday where Notre Dame came out early in the second period. They had a power play at the beginning of the period that carried over from the first, and Jordan Gross just got over the blue line on a rush and whipped it on net. Rob Nichols never had a chance on it. So just a great goal to give Notre Dame the lead. UConn comes back, gets one, and then just a defensive miscue later on in the game allows Notre Dame to win it. Then you go to the Barclays Center, and, you know, honestly, I am so sick of these games that are considered home games but aren't played in Hartford, and this one's played in another state. It happened with Notre Dame last year. You go to Notre Dame, you tie them, phenomenal game on national television. You come back 2 days later to Bridgeport, the worst place in the world, and you end up getting blown out 6-1. Mike Kavanaugh goes on a rant how they end up never playing in Bridgeport again because of it. But instead, this 2-game home series, which is an opportunity against Notre Dame, huge opportunity, you have to play one of those games in another state, and there's no one there. The only people there are Notre Dame fans. It was just a dead environment, and UConn feeds off that fan energy. When they're at home, I mean, we saw it Tuesday against BU when they go out and get that huge win at home. There's no one there for them on Sunday, and they get blown out, and they actually had some positives from that game. They were closer on faceoffs. They were actually winning faceoffs until the last 6 of the game. That's a huge deal when it comes to puck possession and getting chances. Shots were relatively close for most of the game, but you know, Notre Dame finished their chances, and obviously there was the unfortunate own goal from Sean Pauley that just, you know, he's behind the net and tries to pass it back to the blue line, and no one gets on it, and it's just making a straight line for the goal. That game was honestly an anomaly. It was just super deflating. And, you know, it'll be good to get back to Hartford on Friday before a game at UMass Saturday. I think that they'll win and tie this weekend. I think they'll get 3 points, and they're going to get back on track. But that Notre Dame series was brutal.
Yeah, I mean, I was at that game on Saturday, and I was you know, really happy with the way UConn played. Didn't Kavanaugh sit a couple of starters for the Sunday game in Barclays?
He did. Spencer Noss and Jesse Schwartz, who, you know, Noss is always very reliable, phenomenal freshman season last year. He's been doing very well so far this year, for the most part. And Jesse Schwartz, who you may remember last week, I was all about him and the way he and Max Kalter played together against BU. They were pivotal. But then in the Sunday edition of the Notre Dame series, both Noss and Schwartz were out. And I asked Kavanaugh about it after the game, and mainly about Noss, because he's such a great option to have out there as a scorer. And he said that he expects more from – and he called them both upperclassmen. They're both sophomores, but they're veterans on this team in a way. He expects more from them. He wants to see them improve. He thinks that they have a lot more to give than they did on Saturday against Notre Dame. And they're going to need both of them. I mean, again, Noss is this speedster who works well with Letnov and Tage Thompson. Jesse Schwartz is a grinder. He's such a great player to have on that fourth line with Calder and Joey Ferris. They bring a lot of energy. They win crucial turnovers in the neutral zone, and they can still get pucks to the net. So him and Nas both need to step up. They need to be productive in this UMass series because UConn's going to need them the rest of the season.
Maybe a quick conspiracy theory alert. Maybe Kavanaugh is trying to lose those games that are off-site, that are fake home games, in the interest of reeling as many of them in as possible.
Yeah.
Always a possibility. Or at least something, because like you said, Schwartz was someone who seemed to be a critical guy on penalty kills and putting some really good shifts out there. And Spencer Nas is a central playmaker for the team, a key playmaker for the team. So it's no matter what, even if you expect more of them, that's not – and throwing the fake conspiracy theory away. Just there's some – it is curious because you can expect more of somebody and still let him play in the next game.
But I think that this was a big message sent by Kavanaugh, not just to those two guys, but to everybody, that, if you're not going to play well, you're not going to play. And if you have more to give, you better give it because, this isn't a rookie team in Hockey East now. And while they're young, this is still a team that proved last year it can compete with anybody in this conference, with anyone in the country. So the expectations are high to be able to be on the ice for this team, especially as they bring in more good players because they had to sit guys who are talented. And, a guy like Carlisle Amir gets his chance to come in when Jesse Schwartz is out, and he's a productive player. I think that it was a very big message sent by Kavanaugh, and we're going to have to see what happens after this.
All right, so UConn men's hockey, obviously still a lot of season to go. The two-game series against UMass, the home leg will be Friday night at the Excel Center. And then Saturday evening in Amherst, Massachusetts. So we have that to look forward to. It'll be a big and eventful weekend for Husky sports, and we'll be sure to try and have as much of it covered for you as possible, including soccer and field hockey. Tim, why don't you hit us with the update for those?
All right. Well, I won't be at the hockey game on Saturday in Massachusetts because I'll be at Maroney Stadium. The men's soccer team, huge win on Halloween, beating South Florida in overtime, 2-1 win. Andrew Gears getting the opening goal. South Florida came back to tie it up. And then Abdou Thiam, who has had a fantastic first season, gets his 8th goal of the year on a penalty kick in overtime to win it, to beat the team that UConn has wanted to beat all season for sure. Despite that 7-5-5 record and 3-3-2 in the conference, they got the number 3 seed, which means as a top 4 team in the conference, they get to host a playoff game. They'll host Temple in the quarterfinals. They beat the Owls 2-0 on October 21st down in Philadelphia. So this is going to be a good chance to get another win over Temple and former UConn player Flo Liu, who's now an assistant coach there. If they win that, they go to Tampa, to USF's home field, where they'll be trying to win the American Conference Championship for the first time. Meanwhile, women's soccer now into the conference semifinals. They won yesterday, on Tuesday, I should say, against East Carolina, 3-1 in the conference tournament. They're going to play Cincinnati on Thursday, and they cleaned up at the awards. I mean, it was ridiculous. They went 16-2 in the regular season, obviously, 8-1 in conference, regular season champs, and then just took all the accolades. Rachel Hill was the co-offensive player of the year. Steph Ribeiro was the midfielder of the year in the conference. Emily Armstrong was the conference's goalkeeper of the year. Len Santeris was the coach of the year. Hill, Ribeiro, and Armstrong were all first-team all-conference. Sam McGuire made the second-team all-conference. And Leanne Keegans and Kim Urbanek were on the all-rookie team. So just all the weapons for the Huskies getting respect. And a couple of snubs, too. I think Heidi Drewell could have made the all-rookie team. She probably should have and didn't. Andrea Plusenek should have been second-team all-conference at least. I think she's better than that. So UConn has definitely got a lot of talent, a lot of depth to go far. They should win the conference tournament, and that should put them in the top 10 in the country. Then NCAA tournament starts. They should get at least a few home games and really be able to make a chance, make a run at those ACC, Pac-12 schools that are going to dominate in the tournament. And then field hockey, it's field hockey. It's on par with women's basketball at this point. We say the same thing every week. Field hockey went 18-0 in the regular season. They are number two in the nation, which is dumb. They're number six in the RPI, which is even dumber. They've outscored their opponents 112-6. That's just ridiculous. They're now into the conference semifinals because obviously they won the Big East. So they're going to play Old Dominion on Friday, and then they'll play either Temple or Villanova Sunday in the championship game. And then they go off and win the third straight national title. Charlotte Vetner, we got to keep updating on her. 34 goals and 10 assists. The next closest goal total on the team is 14. It's ridiculous. It's dumb. It's fantastic. It's awesome.
Yeah, and it's good to see the women's soccer team also, collecting all those awards and looking like they could really make a run. That'll be exciting, and they're going to be in action on Thursday.
Yeah, and I'm so excited for them. I cover the team, so I shouldn't be talking like a fan right here, but this is a team that's played in four national championship games. Unfortunately, all of them against North Carolina, so they never had a chance of winning them. But this is a team that really deserves to get back there. Lanson Tierce in his 35th year has really brought the Huskies back to the level they used to be at, and they just don't get the respect because they're in the American, not in the ACC or the Pac-12 or the SEC. So it's good to see them ready to take on the country. Like they look like they're going to make a deep run.
Well, we love deep runs in the postseason for sure here at UConn, so be sure to keep an eye out for that from both. From all three of those teams, really, from men's soccer, women's soccer, and of course field hockey.
Yeah, men's soccer has to win the conference tournament in order to get in at this point, but they definitely could. It'll be weird if UConn misses the tournament 2 years in a row in men's soccer. They made it 17 years in a row or something like that before that. So, I mean, if they get in and they're hot, that can be trouble for someone else.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, even some hope still for men's soccer, but definitely a lot of positive things going in the way for women's soccer and field hockey as well. Men's basketball kicked off their season, their exhibition season at least, this past Sunday at Gamble Pavilion with an 88-72 win over the Division II University of Tampa Spartans. We got to see our first glimpses of Jalen Adams and Steve Enoch, the incoming freshman, as well as graduate transfers Sterling Gibbs from Seton Hall and Sean Miller from Cornell. And I think the most impressive player out of that bunch of the newcomers that we got to see pretty conclusively was Sean Miller, who had 18 points and 6 rebounds. And what was really the most positive part about it, because obviously the stat sheet, not super, super important in an exhibition game, but this guy has an offensive presence in the low post, which, I feel like you'd be hard-pressed to come up with when the last time was that UConn really had somebody like that in the low post offensively. So my biggest takeaway, I was at the game, was Sean Miller, and that element that he brings. Jalen Adam, a close second, though, if we're talking about the new guys. He looked comfortable out there. I mean, he did some things that were also very typical of a freshman, but he also definitely, to me, showed the potential to kind of dazzle out there, to be able to drive past defenders, but also be a very a strong enough shooter that defenders had to respect that, which of course then feeds how dangerous he is as a to-the-basket player. So those were probably my biggest takeaways from the exhibition win. Tim, you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I was at the Barclays Center, so I didn't get to watch too much. The two things that I saw that were negatives for me, I saw bits and pieces of Amita Brima trying to get rebounds, and it was very sad. It was really upsetting to watch. And then free throw shooting, 54.2% from the foul line. That's unacceptable. I mean, we know UConn's a bad foul shooting team every year, but that really took away for me from the 48.5 field goal percentage, which is fantastic. That, I mean, you leave plenty of points on the board when you do that. When you shoot 54% from the line, you can't be doing that. And Brima, I mean, he had this opportunity to get stronger this summer. Maybe he did. I've seen him a couple times, and he doesn't look like he's put on that much muscle. But you have to be able to get rebounds. I guess it's good that Sean Miller's here now. because he's a rebounding machine. Daniel Hamilton's going to be a conference leader in rebounds again, but you're a 7-foot center and perceived to be top 10. A lot of people have him around that number 8 spot in terms of centers in the country. You got to be able to do more than block shots. You have to get rebounds. You have to get points. I mean,
yeah, I mean, especially defensive rebounds.
Yeah.
You know, which we saw last season was such a huge problem with him so frequently going for the block and then also being so, you know, scrawny and weak that he gets pushed around a lot down there. When we think about this season and, you know, what are the things that need to happen for UConn to reach its full potential, you know, Amita Brima taking that step up in his basketball IQ is one of those top 3 or 4 most important things, you know, probably behind, you know, how will all these new pieces gel together and if someone will step up and be a leader for the team. It really is, you know, you need Amita Brima to be a more complete basketball player if this is going to be a better team.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, those other things I think will come. I think that the players will gel. There seems to be a lot of chemistry, unlike last year when there was absolute zero in terms of chemistry. And I think Rodney Purvis, from what I've heard, is really stepping up as a vocal leader and can really push the guys on this team. Sterling Gibbs will do that too. But Brima, on the court, Brima needs to be able to get those better numbers.
Yeah, I have to agree. I mean, as important as it is to have that shot blocker down low, you can't just be selling out. It's almost like you don't want to say he's going for the statistic or the stat of just trying to, you know, accumulate blocks, but there were plenty of times last year where it was more beneficial to the team to stay with your guy, protect the weak side, and rely on the help defense. So I think that it works both ways. UConn's got to have better help defense. A lot of times when he went for the block, there was no help, but the other way around, he needs to stay home and just box out. There just was not enough boxing out from Amita Brima. Even if you're a thin guy, when you have that type of frame, if you just box out, you can get in position for, you know, tons and tons of rebounds. So even someone like Hashim Thabeet, who does not want to get physical and does not want to body you up, he could get himself in between the defender and the basket for some boards. So I think that is going to be an absolutely crucial part of UConn season coming up, rebounding the basketball. We must win the rebounding battle. Can't have games like last year where it's just like, if we don't sink a three, we're assuming that we have no chance of a second chance opportunity. And on the defensive side, if it's not like a long rebound coming into our hands, we're never getting, you know, they're just in there 2-3 shots per trip. So I think, as you stated, rebounding the basketball for Amita, much more important than the block shots that he picks up this year.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be obsessed with trying to block those shots from, you know, where he has to step out and get the block. But UConn's perimeter defense is going to be good enough where he can stay home and block their shots in and near the lane and get himself in position for the rebounds, because that's where, like you said, that's where they're going to need him most. You know, I think Sean Miller will be a nice boost down there, but you've got Hamilton, Purvis, Gibbs, Adams all on the perimeter. I think those are all guys who are going to be able to shut down out there. So I think he's got to keep that in mind.
And I also think offensively he's got to do more as well. Yeah. I mean, you can't be a guy at that size with that type of movement skills and you're just a non-factor offensively. That can't be. As I just said, Hashim Thabeet was putting in, you know, double-doubles on the reg, and he was able to, his last couple years, figure out how to score the basketball. And I don't have any bit of a hard time saying that Amita Brima has better feet than Hashim. So he should be able to do those same exact things. He's a talented, talented athlete. He's got to be able to drop the ball in the bucket a little bit. We're not talking, you know, I'm not looking for him to become Hakeem Olajuwon here, but like small, little, tiny, maybe a little tiny half baby hook, maybe a little, not even a turnaround, but just something where his back is to you, he turns, he's gigantic, he's still taller than you, it's a little tiny baby hook, and it's in, you know. So we need to be able to throw the ball down low when our guards are cold and say, Amita, can you get us a bucket? Because you have the advantage 9 nights out of 10.
Yeah, and, you know, once they actually start running offenses, because they – clearly were not doing that last year, and I don't believe they did so against Tampa either, from what I've heard from the post game. Once they start running offenses, they need to design some stuff to get him the ball. And like you said, he's a big guy. He's a 7-foot guy. You should be able to get him the ball over everyone else. Put it high and let him get it, and then let him do his thing. I mean, this shouldn't be as difficult as it seems to be for UConn.
So we'll definitely have to keep our eyes open on Amit Abraima. Make sure he continues to take that step up that UConn needs to be the team that we all hope and think it can be come March. Looking forward for UConn and UConn football more specifically, the Huskies are traveling to New Orleans for the second time in a row. I find myself wishing that I too was traveling to New Orleans, but
amen.
But it's going to be Tulane's homecoming. UConn will be playing the Green Wave at 4 p.m. on ESPN News. By all indications, you know, again, that UConn should win. Tulane is 2-6. All six losses have come to teams that are pretty good, to whom you can excuse losing. But, you know, if we're going to go by some other efficiency rankings, it looks like UConn has the advantage here. And with the Huskies playing the way that they have, of course, if they can continue to build off of the ECU performance, then everything should go well. What's on the line for UConn? A fifth win on the season, and then bowl eligibility being on the table, at least, in those final two games. Tim, your thoughts as we head into Tulane for, what's another pretty big game for us?
I just think it's funny when you say they should win, and when we said that earlier in the week, Tulane fans kind of jumped on it and started losing their minds. Like, who are you to say that UConn, this team that's not that good that came down here and lost last year, should beat Tulane? I'm just thinking to myself, you know, they had a good point when they said that in the first few games of the season for UConn, those first three wins, those opponents only combined to beat, well, it was Eastern Michigan among FBS teams. They had a couple FCS wins too.
We made that point on our own on the UConn blog Twitter account. So we
exactly. And they tried to use that against us. And that, yes, that's fair. But then you go and beat East Carolina, who has some big wins, has Virginia Tech on their side. So transitively, we beat Virginia Tech. But then you look at Tulane's schedule. Their only wins are Maine and UCF, both at home, and other than that, they've been blown out by everyone. 37-7 against Duke, 65-10 against Georgia Tech, 49-10 at Temple, 42-7 against Houston, 31-14 against Navy, and 41-13 against Memphis. But, as Tulane fans point out, they were winning that Memphis game 13-0. Watch out. It blows my mind. Their rushing isn't that good. They're not a great passing team. They don't really have a great offense. Their defense is obviously very iffy. So at least UConn has shown a solid defense and signs of a great run game and a solid passing game. So I don't see any reason why UConn doesn't go down there and win by at least two touchdowns.
Well, I think that when you're talking about an away game, two touchdowns always gets a little dicey. But with all the points that you made, it'd be very tough to see UConn going down there and losing this game. I mean, just look at their team stats for Tulane. Points against, 37.9, 116th in the country. Rushing yards rushing yards for, 121st in the country. I mean, let's see, points per game, 18, 120th in the country. I mean, these are horrible stats. I mean, to be in the 120s, you're in the doldrums. You're in the dregs.
UConn the last 3 years.
Exactly. I mean, that's where we were. That's where we've been hanging out. We know what that looks like and what that feels like. And it feels like a 5-game losing streak for Tulane, to be completely honest with you. I don't think that UConn should go down there. It's going to take – let's not sit here and say that it's impossible, because we've seen this UConn team. We've seen them give up, 20 yards a pop running the ball to South Florida and Cincinnati. We've seen sheriffs turn the ball over left, right, and center. So if we go down there and we start to turn the football over, you better believe that we're going to lose the football game. And that's going to happen. You play an away game and you start turning the football over, that's going to happen. But if we go down there and we ride our kill and we establish the run early and we actually get a lead, we should be able to roll right through this team. And if we can do that, if we do beat Tulane, then at least, like Amon said earlier, it sets up a really exciting last couple weeks, last couple matchups, try to get one and maybe sneak into a bowl game. And if we did, let's just say right now that if we did get into a bowl game, boy, what a success that would be for Bob Diaco this year after where we were looking and what last year looked like.
I think I saw one of our guys, Dan Connolly, tweet something from the Midwest Connection or the Mountain West Connection over on SB Nation, and they have a prediction that UConn's going to play Nevada in a bowl game, which says that they're going to at least beat Houston or Temple and get this Tulane win. That's an impressive vote of confidence in UConn, and I mean,
that's a bold prediction, yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely bold, but it's not out of the realm of possibility. I think, like we said earlier, I think we all agree this Tulane game is going to be a win. They'd have to really screw up not to win this game, and there's obviously the chance they do that. But, you know, then Houston coming up here with the elements and, you know, everything on the line, the bye week beforehand. I mean, everything is lining up for this to be a really telling stretch of the season for UConn, and I think we can really see a lot from Bob Diaco as a second-year coach, the way UConn plays these last 3 weeks.
And I think that UConn against Temple, that might be our best chance to get it done, to get to a bowl game, because I think I just hate that Houston matchup. I hate a mobile quarterback against UConn. I think it just is really, really bad matchup. But Temple, even though they look good this week against Notre Dame and they were right in that game, that's still a team that UConn can hang with. They just play the same style, you know, a style that we can go toe-to-toe with and just I think we'll be in that game. So really, it's kind of crazy that 1 week later we're talking about all these positive what-ifs for UConn when we were 60 minutes away from losing to ECU and just, you know, putting a nail in the season again. Just putting a nail in the coffin and just calling it another year. So really, you got to give props to Diaco and the whole team. And they really came out and played like it was a, you know, like a postseason game for them. You saw the emotion. You saw on the fourth down stop, guys are just going absolutely nuts. I think that you have to be excited that Bob Diaco is still able to keep that fire going for these kids, regardless of the position of the season.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you say 60 minutes away. It was actually probably even less than that when you think about, you know, the quick pick six that got ECU out to a 6-0 lead.
Yeah,
right.
But I think, you know, my thing with Tulane is that with the Tulane game is that we're saying if UConn doesn't screw it up, but this UConn team has shown a propensity for screwing things up, for bad plays, bad penalties, bad on-field discipline,
bad turnovers.
So, like you said, you know, if Brian Schreffs forgets to slide and that turns into a turnover, or if for whatever reason, because the offensive line struggles, we can't establish the running game, then things actually could start to go bad, you know, down in Tulane, and you know that would be a real letdown. So I think, and this is a Tulane team that beat UConn last year. I know it's a different UConn team. We've got a different quarterback. We've got a different mindset. We've got more belief, and we're 1 year bigger, older, and stronger because it's most of those same players. But I think even though I do think UConn is the better team, it probably still would end up being a fairly close game because it's two defensively oriented teams. So I just, you know, I just want to throw this out there that yes, of course, by all indications, UConn should be winning. But even the East Carolina game, you know, like we said, there were things that you wanted to see go better, and they really got, you know, they really got masked by really excellent game by the defense and Arkell Newsom. So,
agreed. I just want to state that, Amon, though, that I agree with all of what you just said, except I don't think it's fair to compare the two teams defensively because I think Tulane, when you're talking about Tulane, you're talking about points against 38 points per game, 116th in the country. And when you're talking about UConn points against, you're talking about 21 points against, good for 30th in the nation. So really big disparity there in terms of what our defense should be able to do given, you know, just a basic even ground, our defense versus their defense, I don't think it's fair to compare the two, because theirs is leaking like a sieve compared to our defense, which is ranked 30th in the country.
Yeah, if you look at just the numbers, the total defense is weird because Tulane is 91st in the country, UConn's 93rd. But remember, UConn's only really bad defensive game, really, really bad, was the Cincinnati game where they just got steamrolled to 612 yards.
And total defense doesn't matter either, because if you're up by a lot, you're just going to play prevent. So you're going to give up extra yards. Points is what, you know, is what matters.
Exactly. When you look at the points, it's 190 for UConn compared to the 303 for Tulane. Tulane's not great at turning the ball over either. You know, they're in that like that 95 range in terms of total interceptions. They've got 6 on the year. They've recovered 7 fumbles, which is solid, but they're not going to really force any turnovers, I don't think. It's really going to be a matter of UConn avoiding making the mistakes.
Well, either way, it's really quite the 180 that we've made, you know, from really being ready to talk about how 20 people are going to watch the Houston game to potentially, you know, what kind of environment there might be, because Brenner, you said you think Temple's more winnable, but I think the Houston game is more winnable than the Temple game, because of some of those reasons that I mentioned earlier about, you know, the bye week and the team from Texas coming up and playing in November. And I think they'll have, hopefully, what should be a really exciting home crowd behind them here to see, you know, who wants to come see a nationally ranked team, to see UConn maybe play for a bowl berth, you know, on senior night, you know, with all of those things. I think I give the edge, if we're picking one of those two, if we're saying, all right, we beat Tulane, which one of those two do they win? I'm going to go with Houston.
Maybe. If they can get the crowd, which, you know, maybe with, you know, basketball's going to be back at that point, and I don't know. I think Houston's going to be a very tough game no matter what, and I think depending on the way you look at either of them, both of them could be winnable. I feel better about Temple than I do about Houston, but you definitely make some very good points, and I understand where you're coming from, and I wouldn't rule it out.
Yeah, I agree with that, Amon. I just, like I said, the matchup of the mobile quarterback just terrifies me for UConn's defense, the way we play, the way we want to set up, and the way we are kind of lacking in the coverage on the outside before this last game. I think you just saw it against South Florida, that it's one extra thing too many to try to defend. But with this last game, I am going to say that I would lay the 5.5 for Tulane for this next game. And we were very apprehensive of laying the points in the previous two games, or taking the points and taking UConn. But 5.5, I'll lay those this week against Tulane.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, yeah, either way, UConn's got to get the win. And then if that happens, we've got an exciting close to the season. No matter what, we get to watch games throughout the season with meaning, with postseason implications, however modest they may be.
Just for us, too. Sorry to cut you off. Not just for us. You have to think about when Houston comes up here, because they're probably still going to be – is the Memphis game against Houston before or after that?
I think before.
I think before? Okay, so yeah. If they beat Memphis before that game, then, you know, you're talking about trying to run the table to finish off the season and possibly win the American Championship. And at that point, with Memphis is in really good position right now for the college football playoff if they win out. But if Houston is able to steal a win against them, then you've got a win over a team that beat Ole Miss, who beat Alabama. You finish the season undefeated in the conference. You win the championship. You're 13-0. That, not saying that they'll make it into the playoff, but maybe one of those New Year's Six games. I mean, there's definitely a possibility of that for the Cougars.
I think if they go 13-0, they're going to be in the playoff.
I like to think so, and I want to agree with you, and I'm all about that, and I'm all for
the other Heisman. If you look at all the other teams that are up there right now, they have to play each other.
Yeah, definitely.
At the conference championship game, so it should be there should not be enough zeros in the loss column to keep them out, but that would be a blow to the American if they went completely undefeated and were kept out.
The problem is we saw on Tuesday when the college football poll came out that, or the college football playoff poll came out, that the committee is really showing that they're going to give higher consideration to those brand teams no matter what. I mean, there's no way Alabama should be in the top four right now. But, and I think, you know, last year we saw what happened with TCU and Baylor, despite what they did during the season, despite going undefeated. And yes, obviously they didn't have the conference championship game like Houston does, but I don't know, I have a bad feeling that even if they go 13-0, even if Memphis goes 13-0, I want to see either of them get in, and I think they should get in. I just don't think the committee will put them in.
I can see where you're coming from, certainly, but
yeah,
with this year, there's a bunch of – right now, it's like if they want to put Alabama in the playoff, their strength of schedule is third best in the country, so it's like
– right.
It's tough to argue with that 100%. And the other teams up there, yeah, it's like you're not going to crack those, but those teams are going to play, and Ohio State is going to have to play – two big games coming down the stretch. So if they lose one, I think they'll fall below an undefeated Memphis or Houston. I don't think that Alabama, with one loss, they'll still stay ahead. I think that even if LSU loses one game, they'll still stay ahead. I think that if Clemson loses, though, they'll drop right out. And I think that if Baylor loses, they'll drop right out. And I think if TCU loses, they'll drop right out. Obviously, Iowa as well. But really, the teams that you got to really be worried about are those, like you said, the one-loss teams that kind of look like they can win out and have really good strength of schedules, like Alabama and Notre Dame. See, the problem is for Memphis and Houston, like, let's say Notre Dame just wins out, and then they get their strength of schedule to be, like, in the top 10, and they got a couple good wins, and suddenly, yeah, you're right, they'll just get placed above because of their name brand and what they bring. But at least the American's in the conversation, so it's really hard to believe, actually, that we would have teams vying for college football playoff spots. Just look how pessimistic we were a couple years ago. Yeah, look how pessimistic we were a couple years ago on this entire league and where it was going to send UConn football. So I think we got to take positive vibes away from the fact that things have really gone in a better direction than we thought.
Yeah, and I think that depending on how these teams do in bowl play, I think that Memphis and Houston can both go up against any Power 5, well, mostly any Power 5 team, and really give them a good run in a bowl game. And if the American shows that it can perform well against those teams, then, you know, come next year, if we're in the same situation again with Houston and Memphis, or, you know, with Temple and Cincinnati maybe, then, you know, people will start to see, well, the American has proven that they can play against anybody. We should really consider that. Strength of schedule is going up for all these teams, so you know, they're really going to have the chance to showcase themselves, and maybe we can talk about getting a team, I mean, this is a couple of years down the road maybe, but getting a team into the playoff and into the New Year's Six.
Wouldn't that be something? And yeah, I think that's a very doable possibility with the way the teams are improving. Either way, to loop it back to UConn, I think it's good to see two ranked opponents on the schedule. If there's some meaning behind it for us and for them on both sides, that's really what it's all about, you know, and that's what's going to give this conference some juice is, you know, UConn playing for bowl eligibility, maybe Houston Temple playing for something slightly bigger, but both teams have something on the line, and that's how rivalries are formed.
Or they're just made up.
But to get there, UConn's going to have to beat Tulane this weekend. Be sure to check that out, 4 p.m., ESPN News. Otherwise, that's going to do it for us here. For Brenner and Tim, this is Amon. Thank you all for listening.